We ended the morning session with completing the first 8 verses of Lord Brahma's prayers, and the final one, number 8, is actually many of the verses in this chapter 14. They're quoted again and again and again. And text number 3 and text number 8 are especially quoted. Just as a reminder, the final message in his prayer here is that he had accepted the path of bhakti, and he had rejected the path of speculative knowledge. And then in this text 8, he's describing the internal cultivation of bhakti. Just as a reminder, because hearing again helps us remember. The first part was anticipating Krishna's mercy, expecting Krishna's mercy, the internal cultivation, whether it's things are going this way or things are going that way, expect Krishna's mercy. That was Krishna's mercy. And the second was to accept responsibility of our past actions, rather than not liking a particular reaction or liking a particular reaction, just accepting responsibility for our past deeds. We're the creator of our own good fortune and ill fortune. And the third is, whatever this external circumstance is, remaining in a spirit of offering obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all circumstances of life, staying in this mood of shelter taking. And the final passage in that very wonderful verse is, by so doing, just staying engaged in devotional service in that way, one is assured of mukti pade svadaya bhak, of inheriting the property of the father is the right of the son who survives his father, meaning, because who is Brahma's father? Lord Vishnu. Garbhadakshai Vishnu. So, and his abode is in the spiritual world. So you'll go to the spiritual world. Just take it to shelter of the personality of Godhead. In that disposition, you go back to Godhead. Krishna will help you. So, the next series of verses, they're not too many. 9, 10, 11, and 12, just 4 verses. These verses are Lord Brahma's offering of his apology, requesting the Supreme Lord to extend forgiveness for his offense. And we'll go through these very quickly. It begins, text 9. Oh, I have to do this. Yeah, okay. I'll just read the translation. My Lord, just see my uncivilized impudence. That's pretty strong language. Anaryam. There's Arya and there's Anarya. Those that are not behaving in a civilized way. Anarya. Krishna speaks like that about Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Anarya Jushtam Ashvargyam. How is this non-Aryan behavior coming over you? To test your power, I try to extend my illusory potency to cover you, the unlimited and primeval supersoul who bewilders even the masters of illusion. What am I compared to you, I'm just a small spark in the presence of a great fire, which is what our philosophy is. The same as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, a living entity is a tiny angsa. Mamev angsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, eternally. That's our position. We're very, very tiny sparks in the presence of a big, great fire. And so the anarya behavior, the uncivilized impudence, is the spark to think the spark is going to cover the fire. That's illusion. Yet the person who he was thinking he would cover is the one who covers all those who are masters of illusion. And the display that Krishna showed is made it very clear. The opulence and power of Krishna is unlimited. Here's another nice painting where Lord Brahma is offering his prayers and Krishna looks pretty casual, leaning against a tree. So, text 10. Therefore, kindly excuse my offenses. Kshama. I've taken birth in the mode of passion. He's the creator. And I am therefore simply foolish, presuming myself a controller, independent of your lordship. My eyes are blinded by the darkness of ignorance, which causes me to think of myself as the unborn creator of this universe. But please consider that I am your servant and therefore worthy of your compassion. Maybe some of you are a little familiar with the prayer or the appeal that Lord Brahma offers to Lord Vishnu in the ninth chapter of Canto 2. Lord Vishnu comes before him, even before creation takes place. And Lord Vishnu offers Brahma the opportunity to accept any benediction he likes. So he asks for the benediction of never falling under the illusion that I'm the creator. And that's a good one for us to remember. Whatever it is that we do, we're not the doer. Whatever service we do, behind us is the personality of Godhead, and we're the instrument, not the doer. So that the doer consciousness, or karta aham consciousness, is material consciousness, and it guarantees one thing: you're going to forget Krishna. So his prayer is, let me never forget you. Let me always remain in your service. And for that, he's asking for mercy, because we also need mercy. Otherwise, how can we be engaged in the service of the Supreme? We need mercy. And his appeal is, those who are fallen, you're merciful by nature. And for those that are fallen, you have special mercy. So I'm your candidate. Very similar to what Rupa and Sanatan Goswami said to Lord Chaitanya. You have appeared in this world to deliver the most fallen. And guess what? There's no one more fallen than us. We're your best candidates. Please give your mercy upon us. Then, you can't read it so well because of the light, but the next one. What am I? You can see there's Krishna with his cowherd boyfriends behind him, and there's Lord Brahma offering to this prayer. What am I, a small creature, measuring seven spans of my own hand? I'm enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature, total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window. Apparently, window screens aren't new. because Lord Brahma knew about them. This is a long time ago, 5,000 years ago. It's not new technology. I guess they had mosquitoes and they had to keep mosquitoes out. So he's in one of those pot-like universes, but unlimited universes pass through the pores of his body. So he's likening Krishna to Mahavishnu, which is not inappropriate because Krishna is the source of Mahavishnu, who is the source of universes that pass through the pores of his body. We'll hear Brahma is not confused or unclear. Brahma is very clear that Krishna is the source of Mahavishnu. He's the source of everything. He's already seen it in that display of all the Vishnu forms or expansions of Krishna, including Mahavishnu. So through your expansion, a portion of your plenary portion universes are coming from the pores of your body. How great are you? And he makes this comparison of particles of dust passing through openings of a screen window. We've all seen this. So I found an image that reminds me of watching this. The morning sun comes through the window. And when the morning sun comes through the window, you can see little particles of dust dancing in the rays of the sun. And then if the window is open or the screen is open, So the particles of dust pass through the little pores of the screen. And so you're like that. Your nature is, you're literally unlimited. And then the final of these prayers for apologies. Nice one. Oh, Lord Adhokshaja, does a mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks with his legs? No. And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or unreal, that is actually outside your abdomen? Pretty clever. He's an intelligent fellow, Lord Brahma. So mothers aren't going to fault their child within their womb or within their abdomen when they kick. And I am like your child. And for that matter, what isn't within your abdomen? Everything is within you. It's a nice old painting. Here's three different Brahmas. There's Lord Brahma riding on his swan carrier. Here's Brahma standing before Krishna offering his prayers. Here's Brahma offering his, at the very beginning, his repeated obeisances again and again and again and again and again and again in the mood of submission on this theme of humility. So we have a nice section forward. So if whoever's in that control box can change to the other slide. I hope somebody's there. Is there somebody in that control room? Need to go to the other PowerPoint. Okay. So, we're going to do a little review. I see some people in the audience that weren't with us this morning. You saved yourself 2.5 hours of very valuable time. But we'll just do a quick review. And the topic in those first 8 verses was how to know the unknowable. That's a contradiction, right? How to know the unknowable. And not only unknowable, but the unknowable has unlimited potencies. How is that possible? So the theme for the morning was by humility. Krishna helped to make Brahma humble, or bring him to the point of even more humble than humble, completely humbled. And in that humility, he had all these wonderful realizations which he shared in these nice prayers. And one sense, he's indicating, as he does in Canto 3, Chapter 9, that's a section where Brahma is also speaking about the process of creation. He has darshan of the Supreme Lord, similar to what we find in Canto 2. Again, it's described that he has darshan of the personality of Godhead. And he's offering this nice prayer. I'll just read. Oh, my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed. And you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. So, what happened? Okay. If you remember from Friday, well, those of you that were with us Friday evening, it was also discussed in the morning class, where Ramananda Roy, in describing this tatte nukampam susamikshamano, gyane prayasam udapasya namanta eva, that verse, that when the tendency for mental speculation is set aside, and instead of approaching knowing Krishna through the power of speculation, one approaches Krishna by appealing for his descending mercy, inviting his descending mercy by extending devotional service unto him from the heart with meaningfulness and purpose of trying to please Krishna, just trying, because who are we to please Krishna? We're insignificant. But with that mood of trying to please Krishna, Krishna removes the darkness of ignorance, and if he wishes, he can reveal himself to us. So here Brahma is saying, and that form that Krishna reveals himself through the process of hearing, we see, interesting, first through the ears. One time, Prabhupada was describing, it was the installation lecture of Rukmini Dwarkadish in Los Angeles. Big event. A very moving lecture. If you have a chance, listen to the lecture. Prabhupada was saying, if you go on serving the deity very nicely, just as you've had Radha Shama Sundar installed here very recently, if you go on serving the deity very nicely, one day, Krishna will speak to you, and he will say, I am like this. It's a very simple expression. So when we're engaged in deity worship, certainly there's faith, otherwise why would we be doing? There's the hearing process, otherwise why would we have faith? But we're in the sadhana stage. That means, you know, there's blocks in our ability to see Krishna, understand Krishna, but through the progressive awakening of devotion through serving and through serving meaningfully with the intention of pleasing Krishna, one day he will say, we'll understand Krishna by hearing first. So seeing through the ears is this phrase by Lord Brahma. And then that quality hearing, the heart becomes cleansed. And when the heart becomes cleansed, Krishna sits there. And the form of Krishna that sits there is according to how you've been hearing. That form of the Lord that you're attracted to is how he sits in your heart. Isn't that nice? So Krishna has been very kind to Lord Brahma. He has shown his, not only his form of Krishna in his original feature in Vrindavan, but he's shown the opulences and glories and powers that overwhelmed Brahma so much when he was paying his obeisances. He was bathing the Lord's feet with his tears of joy. So the prayers end, this is just review, the prayers, these initial prayers end with Brahma having taken full shelter of the bhakti process and leaving aside the speculative process of how to understand that which is unlimited. He's offered his apologies to Krishna, and now he wants to go further based upon his realization through bhakti that Krishna is the original Narayana. Now, sometimes ISKCON devotees have some question, why do you worship Krishna and not Vishnu or Narayan? And there's different scriptural answers to that question. But if you ever have been asked that question or anticipate that you might, because just stay around for a while, you'll be asked the question. Here's a very nice answer coming from this. These prayers of Lord Brahma. Okay, so we'll start with text 13. My dear Lord, it is said that when the three planetary systems are merged into the water at the time of dissolution, your plenary portion, Narayana, lies down on the water, because it's right there in the Sanskrit, Narayana. Now, this Narayana's expansion is Lord Vishnu. So it's also okay to say Narayana lies on the water. You know, Mahavishnu lies on the causal ocean. Garbhadakshay Vishnu lies on the Garbhadak ocean. And Shiradakshay Vishnu lies down on the Shiradak ocean. Your plenary portion, Narayana, lies down on the water. Gradually, a lotus flower grows from his navel, and Brahma, that's himself, takes birth upon that lotus. Certainly, these words are not false. Thus, am I not born from you? And Krishna considers, what are you talking about, Brahma? You're senior by birth to me by so much. I'm just, you know, little boy moving around Vrindavan. You're supposed to be very intelligent. Why are you saying, are you not my father? And he goes on. Oh, Lord of Lords, you are the seer of all creation. You are indeed everyone's dearest life. Are you not therefore my father, Narayana? Narayana refers to one whose abode is in the water born from Nara, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And that Narayana, referring to Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is your plenary portion. All your plenary portions are transcendental. They are absolute and not creations of Maya. What's he saying? Well, in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj, who's pictured here, he discusses this in detail. There's many, many verses, a whole big section. Because his interest, Krishna Das Kaviraj, one of his, in this section, his interest is to indicate Krishna's unique position. This Swayam Bhagavan Krishna in Vrindavan, his unique position. And so he lists one by one. He says, no, you are Krishna, you're objecting, but I'll prove it to you by scriptural reference and logic. You are Narayan. He's having a philosophical debate with Krishna. Because Krishna is taking the position, I'm a little boy in Vrindavan. What are you talking about? So here's the three from Chaitanya Charitamrita. The first one is, Krishna is the original Narayan because Krishna is the ayana, or the refuge of all Naras, indicating in this case the aggregate of all living beings. They're related, but they're different, each of the three, so I'm going to go slowly. It's nice to understand how strong is the logic of Brahma. So Krishna is the ayana, or the refuge of all Naras. He's the refuge of everything. Is he not? Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam. Or there's other verses in Bhagavad Gita. Matak paratram nanyat kinchit asti nananjaya. Krishna is the source of everything. So he's the source of all living entities. And he is the shelter of them, or the ayana, or the refuge. For those of you that like Srimad Bhagavatam, I like Srimad Bhagavatam a whole lot. There's a very nice description in Jiva Goswami's treating of the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Number 10 is the shelter of the first 9. And ashraya. Here it's ayana. But so there's difference of meaning, but similarity of meaning. Ashraya means shelter. Ayana means refuge. And Krishna is the shelter or the refuge of everything. Let's say it in reverse. Is there something that exists outside of Krishna? Prabhupada said it this way. There's two things. There's Krishna, and there's Krishnas, and there's not a third thing in all of creation. Very simple. So whatever the things are, even they may be, you know, Krishna's expansions. The Vishnu forms, the avatars, Narayana, his plenary portions, all of the Vishnu tattva forms, Krishna is the ayana of all of them. So whether the living beings mean the jivas or the forms of the supreme, Vishnu tattvas, he's the ayana of all. Here's what Krishna Das Kaviraj writes, paraphrasing Brahma's statement. You are the ultimate cause and shelter of all living beings. The word Nara refers to the aggregate of all living beings, and the word ayana refers to the refuge of them all. You are therefore the original Narayana. And then the second one, similar but different. Krishna is the source of the Purusha avatars. Besides the living beings, the source of the Purusha avatars, he protects and invests potencies in the Purushas, who are in turn the shelter of all living beings. So he's the shelter of the shelters. Here's what Krishna Das Kaviraj writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The direct lords of the living beings are the Purusha incarnations. The Purushas are protectors of the universes by your power, since you protect those who are the shelter of all living beings, you're the original Narayana. Pretty straightforward. You're the shelter of all living beings, you're the shelter of the Purushas. And then, Krishna oversees the wanderings, that's another meaning of Ayana, of all living beings. Again, Nara. So Krishna Das Kaviraj writes it this way. There are countless universes and fathomless, transcendental Vaikunthas. You see all the deeds of all living beings, past, present, and future, since you are the witness of all such deeds, Ayana, you are the essence of everything. And then, just again in the yellow in the bottom, it's saying the same. You oversee the wanderings, or Ayana, of all living beings, Nara, for this reason also. You are the primeval Lord Narayana. So here's Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, that kind of got carried away with his own power, seeing the unlimited power of Krishna, and now he's humbled again, and back into his position of understanding Krishna's actual identity. So this is a very important part of these prayers. Krishna, as is the Mahavakya of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. What's the principal utterance? Verse 1328. Ete changsa kalapung sang. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Brahma is confirming it here in his prayers by practical realization. After what he saw, there's no question. We may have a question because we didn't see what Brahma saw. But we heard what Brahma saw, and he has no question. So now, he's going to expand this just a little bit more in the next verse. My dear Lord, if your transcendental body, which shelters the entire universe, is actually lying upon water, then why were you not seen by me when I searched for you? What is he referring to? When Brahma was born on the lotus, he began inquiring two main things. Who am I? It's a good question. And the second one is, where did I come from? Another good question. So he, to find out where he came from, he used his reasoning faculty. Well, I'm on the lotus flower. There must be a stem. He could hear the splashing. As described in the Bhagavatam, he could hear the splashing of the waves. So I just climbed down the stem and I'll find where I came from. He climbed down and climbed down and climbed down and climbed down, and there would seem to be no end to that stem. He couldn't see what he's saying here. I couldn't see you. Why couldn't I see you? Why, though I could not envision you properly within my heart, did you then suddenly reveal yourself? Because that's what happened. He heard tapa, tapa, tapa. So he knew what that meant. We would probably go, what's that noise? It's like, you know, the AC unit that keeps coming off and on and blowing cold air on us in the winter. What's that noise? So I stopped. I'm just joking. When he understood what tapa meant, he went back up the top of the lotus, and the tapa that he did was he chanted the mantra that he had received. He just turned it on again. He chanted the mantra that he received. That was his tapa. And then he was expecting that he would see the Lord within his heart, but he didn't. He saw him externally. In fact, not only saw the Lord externally, but he saw the whole spiritual world. And he describes what he saw in those beautiful prayers of Lord Brahma. Whoops. So now, what follows is something very nice. There's verses from 15 till 29. So that's 6 plus 9. That's 15 verses, and they're all on a theme. He's now, Lord Brahma, is going to describe his, like eulogize Krishna's position. And there's a very nice audio section, and if our person sitting in the box back there did what I asked him to do, we're going to do a little sound check and make sure the volume is audible. And before he starts it, I'm going to ask you to... I'm going to give you a quiz question at the end. And the quiz question is, what did you understand from this? Besides, the music was nice.
Lord Brahma attempts to express the ramifications of the opulence that he has seen Krishna display. He prays to Krishna, O Lord, I previously was unable to either understand or see you due to the coverings of your own Maya, your illusory energy. But you are the controller of that Maya, and that was proved by Mother Yashoda's seeing the universe within your abdomen. Now, at the present, that universe is externally manifest as your inconceivable energy, and it is therefore all that I perceive. Today, by your manifesting, all the cows, cowherd boys, and Vishnu forms who are being worshipped by all living entities, you've demonstrated that the entire creation is your inconceivable potency. And now I'm seeing before me the original form of the unlimited Supreme Absolute Truth. To the ignorant, you seem to be of this material world, although it is you who appears as Brahma, the creator, who appears as Vishnu, the maintainer, and as Shiva, the destroyer. To demonstrate that you, the Absolute Truth, is an unlimited transcendental person, you descend within the universe as avatars, and you take birth among the demigods, sages, humans, animals, and the aquatics. As an avatar, you then, by your spiritual potency, perform your innumerable, inconceivable, mysterious pastimes. Due to you, this entire universe, which, like a dream, is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real. And thus, it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. You are the one Supreme Soul, the primeval Supreme Personality, the Absolute Truth, self-manifesting, endless and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness cannot be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. By the grace of his spiritual master, Ajnani can mix bhakti with his jnana. He will then be able to see you as the soul of all souls. He will be able to see you as the super soul of his own self. This vision will allow him to cross the ocean of material existence. For one who has thus realized you, the illusory energy at once subsides, for he is free of the false vision of perceiving anything as separate from you. Seeing you with this vision of knowledge and remaining in knowledge of you, devoid of the false perceptions that are the cause of the existence of the material world, his ignorance and illusion cease. Therefore, through knowledge of you and knowledge of himself as your eternal servant, neither liberation nor bondage have meaning for him, just as day and night have no meaning for one present on the sun planet. How foolish are the jnanis! How foolish are the mayavadis! They are fools because they consider your form as a manifestation of illusion. How foolish are the conditioned souls, regardless of how intelligent they think themselves as being, they all perceive themselves as their bodies, and they thus fail to see their self as part of you. They're all fools because they reject you, and in so doing, they search for the Supreme Soul outside of your Supreme Personality. How foolish are all of these so-called learned men! O unlimited Lord, the saintly devotees who have added bhakti to their jnana seek you out within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, how can discriminating persons appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before them until they refute the illusion that it is a snake? My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years.
Well, we lost the soundtrack at the end, but you get the basic idea. So our surprise quiz question: what is it, one or two or three persons, what is it that you remember from what you heard, Lord Brahma's message to Krishna? Blank or something? Yes? Thank you.
Hare Krishna. We don't need to search outside for God. He's inside within us as Super Soul.
Okay.
That's one point which is mentioned here.
Yeah. Yes? Thank you.
He's unlimited.
Yeah. And that's the theme of this whole section, is how to know the unknowable that has unlimited potencies. How is it possible for a tiny living being to have such knowledge? He's unlimited. By disclosure, we can know something. When he who exists before we exist discloses himself, we can know. The unlimited can disclose some feature of himself and we can know. We require mercy. And mercy is invited by bhakti. Yes, over here? Okay. That's okay.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for a wonderful lecture. Brahma speak about himself that because he is his child, he should and his internal like a child to a father, he his internal servant, and that's therefore he should forgive him.
Someone else had their hand up over here.
Yes.
Krishna is the creator of Maya, but fools think that Krishna is the product of Maya. Gyanis think that Krishna is the product of Maya, whereas Krishna is the creator of Maya.
Yeah.
And if they mix bhakti with their gyan, then they can understand that Krishna is actually the supreme person.
Well, it's possible. It's possible. Yeah, very good. Okay, so let's carry on so that we can hopefully finish on time. Let's carry on so we can finish on time. The section just preceding these wonderful verses, Brahma has made this very bold declaration that Krishna is even the source of Narayan. He's the original Narayan, the source of Narayan, because he's the source of everything. And he is unlimitedly powerful. So Krishna might say, really? Whoops. How do you know that? How can you verify that? So now the next verse is another often quoted verse, text 29. Atapite deva padambujam dvaya prashada leshanu grihita evahi. Those of you that have heard Prabhupada speak, or he is an often quoted verse. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the supreme personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Which sounds very similar to one of the verses that was in that section. So, lesha, this term here, slight trace. Now, the indication is Brahma has received such a slight trace. But the indirect implication is how much benefit then, how much good fortune is with the residents of Vrindavan. This verse is then going to lead into what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Brahma takes a plunge into the ocean of Brajaprem. So this is, he's jumping on the springboard right now before he jumps into the ocean. And earlier in this same canto, chapter 12, another verse where you've heard this phrase, Kritta Punya Punja. Prabhupada speaks Kritta Punya Punja, because Brahma speaks it, where the pious activities of the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna and wrestling with Krishna. Just like, you know, Kamsa was so powerful, even the demigods were afraid of him. Just like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu said, even if I raise my eyebrow, the demigods tremble. He was so powerful, without all the, because time doesn't permit, so powerful, he had subdued so many kings and defeated their entire army, and they're left standing and said, you have two choices. Either you submit to me or I'll kill you. If you submit to me, then you have to assist me in my program, my Kamsa controlling the universe program. So they submitted. Kamsa was very powerful. But with one sako, Krishna killed him. And he was just a 12-year-old boy. But the 12-year-old boy Krishna, when he was wrestling with his cowherd friends, they would defeat him. There's this very often quoted little statement by Radharani's brother Sridham. Often Krishna and Sridham were paired, and Sridham would regularly beat Krishna. And he would say, what kind of big man are you? You always lose. People say you're this, you know, so powerful, and but you always lose. What kind of big man are you? Now, how did these cowherd boys get this opportunity to be in that situation? Here's what Shukadeva Goswami, he's narrating what the cowherd boys do when they're in the forest. Then he just like breaks stride and says, these cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities from many, many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? Whereas in this verse, he's saying even with a slight trace of good fortune, you can understand Krishna. They didn't care to understand Krishna. They were just playing with him. Amazing. We heard this earlier verse of Krishna gave his special mercy to Putana, Bakasura, and Agasura. So how are you going to give your how are you going to give mercy to the devotees? That's coming up. That's text 35. We're still on 29. So, now that, what's going on? Jeez. There's 29. Okay. Brahma has understood Krishna. Now Krishna is more or less asking, what is it that you desire? Take a benediction from me, kind of a statement. So here's what he wants. Very nice verse. My dear Lord, I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life as Lord Brahma, or in another life, wherever I may take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that whatever I may be, even amongst the animal species, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet. That's a proper prayer. That's a devotee prayer. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, he didn't ask to become a resident Vrindavan because he's understood the exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan, but he's feeling really bad that he's made this offense. I'm not qualified to be a resident Vrindavan. Let me just be a devotee. Wherever I may be, let me just be engaged in your devotional service. And then, what's going on? The next series of verses, I'll just read quickly. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying, at this point, Brahma falls in the ocean of Braja Prem. O Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate, Ati Danya, how greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. You know the pastime. Does anyone not know the pastime? I'll say the pastime. During that period of time, when Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys, Krishna manifested himself as calves and cowherd boys. And that pastime, solar year, although for Brahma it was just a few moments, because Brahma's time and our time are different. So 1 year had passed, and please note, when the cowherd boys were stolen, who was absent? Balaram. Who can steal Balaram? Forget it. So Balaram was home. So when the cowherd boys went home, as they were forms of Krishna, because the mothers wanted to have Krishna as their son, so Krishna became their son. And the cows, with maternal affection, they wanted to give their milk to Krishna, so he took the position of their calves. And he directly, as a calf, accepted their milk. It's described in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam and Krishna book. How fortunate. Not only Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj, but all the mothers with children and the cows with calves. Krishna took their form. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. Krishna was very satisfied by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Next. How greatly fortunate. He says it twice. Aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam. Remember that lesha, just a moment, just a fraction of Krishna's mercy, one can understand him, what to speak of these residents of Vrindavan. How fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the other inhabitants of Vrajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune, because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. Vishwanath comments, he doesn't mention their names because he just got through kidnapping them. He doesn't want to bring it up again. He feels bad enough already. He just says, these boys. Text 33. Yet, even though the extent of good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, we, demigods, 11 presiding deities of the various senses headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate. They're not residents of Vrindavan, but because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. You have anything to do with Vrindavan and you're fortunate. So become a demigod. If you're wise, you'll understand what good fortune it is to have that. You're the controllers of the senses of all embodied beings, and especially the residents of Vrindavan through their senses, they're contacting Krishna, the honey of Krishna's lotus feet. And one more. My greatest possible good fortune, buri bhagyam, would be to take birth, any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Who spoke like this? Uddhava. Same mood. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is being searched for in the Vedic mantras. Yat pada raja. The dust of whose lotus feet the Vedas are searching for. And the resident of Vrindavan, it's their life and soul. Then comes this verse 35 that we mentioned before. My mind becomes bewildered. Just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give to these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relatives, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated to you? Tvat krite, dedicated to you. Do I hear a crying child in the audience? Can you be kind and take the child somewhere? Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. They have given you everything. That's the same list. How are you going to reciprocate with them now? You were such a generous giver. And you've given yourself to Putana. How then you reciprocate with these Brajavasis? Vishwanath's conclusion is, he can't. And Krishna basically says, how can I repay you? Just have to be contented with your own devotion. That's the repayment. And he also says, Krishna has raised their level of love to the mood of pranaya. He just amplified and increased and accelerated their natural quality of love. So we're almost done. We're going to go to text 40. We have just 5 verses to go. Brahma now in these concluding verses essentially is saying, or responding to this question, someone may think, oh, I'm very renounced. I have no possessions. And I have no attachments. I wander alone in the forest. I am more advanced than these householder Brajavasis who attend to cows. So these prayers are straightening out that person. My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Not very complimentary language. My dear Master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. You know that verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna gives 3 reasons why he comes? Pritranaya, sadhunam, vinashaya, chaduskritam, dharmasangstha, panartaya, sambhavami, yuge, yuge. The Prabhupada, one lecture, I heard him speak. So which of these is the reason for Krishna's coming? It says he could have sent someone else to do each one of those things. So his real reason is this one. He's come to reciprocate with the affection of his devotees. That's why he comes. Then, to respond to the Gyanis, there are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. I've met some of those people. No, I don't need Bhagavad Gita. I know all about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh, my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. My dear Lord Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. actually, you are the knower and the seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes. And yet, I offer this one universe unto you, my dear Lord Krishna. You bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vrishni dynasty and expand the great oceans consisting of the earth, the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. So very, very beautiful prayers. And how this connects with our japa retreat is, with humility, then surrender and more surrender and more surrender become possible. And with that surrender, then comes service. And when that service is steady, fixed upon the object to be served, Krishna, then Krishna sees that. And different than for the non-devotee, rather than accruing our karma, there's different situations that may be coming our way for examining our, how fixed are we upon Krishna. That's in our day-to-day life, and to be successful in all of that day-to-day life, to be Krishna conscious, we require to chant the holy name in that mood, in that spirit, in that way. So hopefully these messages are go more deeply than just nice stories and slokas and passages. Brahma is our, he's our, the founder of our sampradaya. And he's the imparter of all transcendental knowledge, the recipient of, as we see, such mercy from Krishna. And he wants to give that. He does give that. And through these wonderful prayers directly to Krishna, the original personality of Godhead Krishna, we can understand about Krishna if we get some of that mercy that Lord Brahma wants us to receive. And especially the residents of Vrindavan are receiving that in such volumes we can't even understand. But that's the process, the chanting that we're being given. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Trishe Namaha. The translation Prabhupada has given us is Lord Chaitanya has come to give what no one has ever given before. This love of Krishna in Vrindavan. Please take it. Please don't be distracted by so many distractions. Those of you that were not with us Friday evening, we did this little exercise of chanting and watching where the mind goes. And sure enough, the mind goes to our designations, the services that we do, our roles and responsibilities and our duties and things that are, they're important. They're not unimportant. But when we're chanting, it's not an opportunity to multi-process. It's an opportunity to go beyond those upadhis and just be with Krishna, like has happened here with Lord Brahma. Now, the concluding part, very nice. I like this very much. All the while, just like you see in this beautiful painting, here's Krishna with his left hand extended, because he eats with his right hand, so he's holding the yogurt and fruit in his left hand. Unblinkingly, he's listening to Lord Brahma, and he doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, Hari Bol. Okay, see you later, Brahma. It's been nice having this conversation with you. He doesn't say anything. And the explanation given is, he's just waiting for Brahma to finish so he can go back and be with the cowherd boys. Because that's the love of Krishna. He wants that. And Brahma has interrupted it. That was the offense. So praises and glorifications is not what Krishna wants. He wants our love. Now, Brahma has love, but especially he's attracted to this love of the residents of Vrindavan. It tells us something about our dear Lord Krishna. He's the well-wisher and dearmost friend of all, each and every one of us. We don't have a better friend than Krishna. We have friends, but not a better friend than Krishna. He stays with us no matter what we do. He's guiding us no matter what we do. And this is important guidance to improve the focus in which we chant the holy name. So hopefully these will be helpful, this mood especially, mood of humility of Lord Brahma, as well as the wonderful things that he saw, understood, and appreciated about Krishna. So we'll take questions for a few minutes, and I'd like to end at 5:30, so the next event can be on time. Can we turn the light on in the back corner back there? And then anyone would like to raise a question, please raise your hand. Or something you'd like explained further. Okay, we have a mic. We have a question up here. Put your hand up again, please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, the Japa retreat is so uplifting and it increased, the environment is so encouraging to chant attentively. So Maharaj, how we can carry forward this mood?
How we can do what? Carry forward?
Yeah, how we can cultivate.
Come here bright and early tomorrow morning with your bead bag. Rest well. I was going to give a couple of tips. This is a good cue. There's going to be a wonderful kirtan tonight. And you don't get the opportunity like we do in New York to hear Ananta Govinda and Achyuta Gopi. They sing so nicely. And they can easily go till midnight. I don't know what they're going to do this evening. They may have something else they have to go do. If you want to chant good japa tomorrow morning, carry forward till tomorrow morning. Get sufficient rest. And here's another, two other things. During the day, what a wonderful sound vibration. Sannyasis understand the crying of a child is specifically for those in the renounced order of life to teach us. Whew, boy, I'm glad I didn't get married. Hare Krishna. It's especially grating to the ears of a sannyasi. Anyway, so during the day tomorrow, it says on the sheet, but I'll just emphasize it, Monavrata. Monavrata means remain silent. You know, when little children cry, they're not breaking the rule, they're just being little children. But we want the light on. Can you someone turn the light on again? Thank you. That's good. Monavrata tomorrow. That means, you know, even when you're taking prasadam and, you know, remain, it's helpful. You'll see. It's helpful. It's not just like another rule, oh my goodness. It's helpful. So you stay focused on what your function is, chanting and not conversation. And if you have to do something with your children, fine. But otherwise, Mona, please. And another something that I've learned from japa retreats, eat modestly. If you eat more than modestly, it's really hard to be focused on chanting. After breakfast and after lunch, don't eat too little, but don't eat too much. I learned the hard way a couple of times. So take the lessons and apply them. That's how to go, move forward with this. Something else.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have two questions. The first one was regarding expecting Lord's mercy. So with my tendencies, I feel that because I expect the forgiveness, it seems the regret doesn't seem to be very genuine because I'm expecting already that Krishna is going to forgive or my spiritual authorities are going to forgive me. How to go beyond that to actually focus on the relationship?
The last letter you wrote, we discussed this, the expectation message. And what you can expect is Krishna's mercy, but don't dictate to Krishna the parameters of how he's going to give his mercy to you. Krishna is merciful. Our calculation of what it should look like, here's another way of saying it. When you surrender unto Krishna, you've probably heard me say this before, please understand that you're surrendering on his terms, not your terms, when you're surrendering to Krishna. So if Krishna reciprocates with your surrender in this way, that way, or the other way, it's perfectly fine. Just like, you know, the discussion where Vishwanath was saying sometimes the father gives nice sweet milk and sometimes the father gives bitter neem. Sometimes the father gives nice encouraging words to his son. Sometimes he gives some admonishment. But a loving father does those things out of love, and the father has a better idea of what's best for the child than the child. So why neem is appropriate in one time and milk is appropriate another time, a qualified father will know, and a loving father will administer. Not, oh, you don't want milk? Or excuse me, you don't want neem, I'll just give you milk, even if it may aggravate your disease. So, the similarly, Krishna is loving. And when Krishna gives to his devotee, whatever Krishna gives, whatever comes our way, so it's for our best interest. And same from others. The expectation is, you know, a controller spirit. But we shouldn't be in a controlling spirit. We should be in a serving spirit. And it just takes the whole expectation thing away. From others, from Krishna. And from ourselves, we're tiny. But let me try to be in the service mood. And according to the capacity Krishna gives, I'll try my best. And I could always do better. And I'll continue to try to do better than my best. Then the ability, more ability comes. Krishna is very kind. I understand it's a stumbling block for you. Just stay with, you know, the path of being in that proper mood, and it'll be very helpful.
Can I ask one more?
Yeah.
I try to apply the exercise of the upadhis that you mentioned yesterday. So I realized that when the mind goes to some very specific upadhis, there's a lot of feelings loaded in those upadhis. And when I try to bring the mind back, try to remember myself as being an eternal servant of Krishna, because there are no feelings like that, so the heart seems very empty, and it's hard to keep the mind at kind of in a vacuum heart kind of place.
So what's the? I'm not sure what the question is.
So this the struggle that I felt when applying the exercises that there, for the upadhis, wherever my mind was getting distracted, some patterns were repeating, and there are so many emotions and feelings that are loaded in those upadhis that the mind just goes there. And when bringing back, I don't feel anything when like as being servant of Krishna. So it's hard for me to keep the mind.
Well, that's okay, that's the problem. So what do you do when you have a mind that's uncooperative? Because it's cluttered with stuff. You continue to practice. Abhyasa. with faith in the instruction and faith in the instructors offering the instruction and ultimately faith in Krishna, you continue to practice. This is good medicine. My mind is uncooperative, but it's good medicine. Let me continue. You continue to practice. Here's something I wanted to read, and I think then we'll end with this. This is at the very end of the purport of text 40 of Brahma's prayers from the BBT publication. Concerning Brahma's prayers, of which this verse is the conclusion, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states, quote, "May these prayers of Brahma, which take away all doubts and broadcast all the definitive conclusions of devotional service, become the expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness." Pretty cool. They're prayers, but it's teachings in devotional service. What devotional service is, what it isn't, how to stay on course as distractions come and so forth. Like that Tattenu Kampam Susamikshamano verse, very, very instructive. Your internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness, just stay with it. Just stay with it, with faith in this process through the lens of these teachings. They're very nice teachings in this humble mood. So may you all have a successful 64 round day tomorrow. How many are going to be here for tomorrow morning, 64 rounds? Okay. Look forward to seeing you and being with you. Oh, another tip is, as we mentioned earlier today, stay together. Actually, it was Friday evening. As much as possible, stay in the temple room. Maybe get some heaters in the temple room tomorrow. At least keep the wind chill factor out of the picture because of the turning on the AC. And that'll keep us warm. It's warm when there's nice kirtan or japa together. It'll be warmer here anyway. So I'm going to end. I don't know. Sri Rupa, are you ready? You ready? Okay, so looks like everything is all set up for you. There was a, while they're getting ready, our schedule got messed up. So, can I continue to just introduce what they're doing? Okay, you can do that after. So, part of what was intended in our schedule earlier, like midday, was to amplify the theme of humility. These devotees have come from faraway places to share with us some songs of Bhaktivinod Thakur that give instruction on humility. Similar to those prayers of Brahma's requesting apology or forgiveness from Krishna, there's some similar elements with the mood of humility and submission. It's an important part of bhakti, important part of chanting nicely. So the system is going to be, someone will explain the song, then the song, then Sahari Krishna Kirtan, and then repeat. Another song, explain it like that. So, and then Ananta Govinda and his sister are going to come, and we're going to have a yagya, and it's going to be nice. Everyone will be happy. Go ahead.